Picture this, right? You are sitting in a completely sterile clinic room. Your head is absolutely pounding and you feel awful.
Oh, we've all been there.
Yeah, exactly. So the door opens and a doctor walks in wearing this crisp white coat. They look you directly in the eye, very professional, and confidently hand you a pill.
Right.
You swallow it, and almost straight away, before that medication has even reached your stomach, let alone dissolved into your bloodstream, your headache actually starts to lift. The sharp edges of the pain just sort of dull.
It's amazing, isn't it? You haven't chemically changed a single thing in your body yet.
No, nothing at all. But somehow, just the whole theater of the clinic, you know, the crinkle of the paper on the examination table, the authority of the GP, it's initiated a real physical change.
Yeah, and it is honestly one of the most bizarre and universal quirks of human biology. We frequently experience genuine, measurable, physical relief simply from the act of being cared for. And that is entirely independent of the actual chemical or physical intervention.
Spot on. And that bizarre quirk is the very foundation of what we are looking at today. Welcome to our deep dive. We have got a massive, polarizing question for you. Is energy healing just a placebo?
It's a huge topic.
It really is.
Yeah.
And if it is just a placebo, does that mean it's completely useless? Or is the placebo effect itself this vastly misunderstood biological mechanism? We have got a fascinating stack of sources to get through today.
We really do.
We've got a systematic review on Reiki from the journal Frontiers in Psychology. A massive network meta-analysis on acupuncture and BMC complementary medicine and therapies, a landmark paper from the Annals of Internal Medicine, and to balance it all out, a fiercely critical piece from the Science-Based Medicine blog.
What's fascinating here is that we are looking at what we call an honest pluralism today.
Right.
These sources represent deeply conflicting viewpoints. On one hand, you have rigorous academics trying to validate alternative therapies, and on the other, strict skeptics calling the whole thing biobabble and dismissing it entirely.
And just to be clear, we are not taking any sides here. We're just your impartial guides, really, unpacking the arguments exactly as they appear in these original texts. We want to know what's actually happening in the body when someone claims to be healed by energy.
Exactly. We're just following the data.
Okay, let's unpack this with our first source. Let's jump straight into the deep end with Reiki.
Yes. Reiki.
For anyone unfamiliar, Reiki is a Japanese technique where a practitioner essentially hovers their hands just above or lightly resting on the patient's body. They are theoretically channeling universal energy to encourage healing.
Right. That's the premise.
Now, the 2017 McManus Review, published in the journal Sage, actually concluded that Reiki outperforms placebo on multiple measures. But that older review lacks some strict systematic methodology.
Yeah, it had some gaps.
Right. So the newer Frontiers review explicitly look at randomized placebo-controlled trials, RPCTs, focusing on mental health. But I have an immediate logistical problem with this. How do you even create a fake or sham Reiki treatment for a control group?
Yeah.
I mean, if a pharmaceutical company tests a headache drug, they just press a sugar pill that looks identical. But Reiki is a performance. It's hand movements.
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult to control for.
How do you fake that?
Well, it requires a massive amount of choreography. Mm-hmm. To design a proper RPCT for energy healing, researchers actually have to bring in untrained actors.
Wait, actors?
Yes, literally actors. These actors study videos of Reiki masters and are taught to physically mimic the exact hand positions, the hovering distances, and the pacing of a real session.
Oh, wow.
But the key is they have absolutely no training in the underlying philosophy or the supposed energy channeling.
So they're essentially just doing a highly rehearsed mime routine over the patient.
Precisely. And to the patient lying on the table, especially if they have their eyes closed or are just looking up, the experience feels completely identical. They are totally blind to whether the person is a seasoned Reiki master or an actor who just learned the motions yesterday.
Okay, that is brilliant. And this brings us to a really specific trial highlighted in the Frontiers review. It's the 2017 randomized controlled trial by Baldwin.
Ah, the knee replacement study.
Yes. They took 46 patients who were undergoing knee replacement surgery, which is a highly stressful, genuinely painful procedure, and they split them into three groups.
Right. So you had the real Reiki master, the sham Reiki mimic, and then just a standard quiet time group.
Exactly. And the results were completely wild. They didn't just ask people how they felt. They measured physiological markers.
And that's the crucial part.
The group receiving the real Reiki saw a significant drop in their respiration rate. Their breathing slowed down and deepened into this state of physical calm, and the sham Reiki group simply did not match that drop.
Wait, really? The actor mimicking the exact same hand movements didn't trigger the same physical relaxation?
I know, it's wild. The real Reiki group also saw a massive drop in state anxiety compared to the placebo group. The effect size they measured was a D of 0.93, which is statistically huge.
Yeah, for anyone who isn't a statistician, a D of 0.93 is a massive difference. If you applied that effect size to human height, it would be roughly the difference between your average person on the street and a professional basketball player.
Oh, wow. So it's not some subtle, maybe it's their shift.
No, it's drastically lower panic and much steadier breathing.
But obviously a skeptic would argue that humans are just incredibly perceptive, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe the patient subconsciously picked up on the confidence of the real master versus the actor who is just trying to remember their blocking.
Yeah, that is the standard counterargument, the whole subconscious cues theory.
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. The Frontiers Review actually includes studies on non-human subjects to specifically counter the idea that it's all just expectation.
Non-human subjects, like animals.
Yeah. They cite studies where Reiki treatments supposedly reduce noise-induced microvascular damage in laboratory rats. They even cite claims that it increased cell survival in isolated mice cells in a petri dish and reduced post-operative pain in dogs.
This raises an important question. The traditional definition of a placebo strictly requires expectation. You have to believe you're being treated.
Right, and a laboratory rat has no concept of a hospital or an energy healer.
Exactly. And isolated cells in a dish certainly don't have conscious expectations. So if we are seeing measurable improvements there, how can we explain the placebo effect? The believers argue this proves a genuine physical mechanism.
But the skeptics must have a field day with that.
Oh, absolutely. The skeptics argue this is actually a classic case of expectation bias or observer expectancy on the part of the human handlers.
Ah, so the humans contaminate the data.
Spot on. Even if the dog doesn't know it's getting Reiki, the human evaluating the dog's pain level knows.
Wow.
Or the researcher handling the rat might unconsciously hold it more gently if they themselves expect it to be calmer.
So the placebo effect is actually happening in the mind of the human observer, not the animal.
Precisely. They unintentionally find the result they're hoping to see.
Okay, so if it is this hard to test the physical reality of Reiki hands just hovering in the air, let's transition to something more invasive. What about a therapy that actually breaks the skin? Like acupuncture.
Oh, this is a perfect transition. Because with acupuncture, we are looking at the BMC Complementary Medicine and Therapies paper.
Right, the massive network meta-analysis. They looked at 45 trials, over 8,000 participants, just to analyze the placebo effect of sham acupuncture for chronic pain.
It's a huge data set.
But here's my pushback on this. Traditional Chinese medicine says acupuncture relies on incredibly precise locations, specific needle depth, and this radiating sensation called deki.
Right. The deki sensation is key to the traditional practice.
So if researchers use a sham needle, but it still physically touches or pricks the patient, isn't it still doing something physically? How is that a placebo?
It's an incredibly tricky problem.
Yeah.
You can't just hand them a sugar pill. So biomedical researchers have invented these highly complex clinical sham devices. They use things called the Streitberger, the PARC, or the Takakura needles.
What do those actually do?
They are essentially retractable stage daggers.
Oh, like a prop knife in a play.
Exactly. The needle touches the skin. The patient feels a prick, so it looks and feels like it's piercing the flesh. But the tip actually just telescopes back up into the hollow handle.
That is brilliant.
They also use other methods like very shallow needling or putting real needles in non-acupoint locations.
So what did the BMC study actually find with all these stage dagger needles?
They found that sham acupuncture has a massive placebo effect. Just the ritual provides significant pain relief. But here's the kicker. The non-penetrating shams, where the skin isn't broken at all, exhibited the lowest placebo effect.
Wait, so actually breaking the skin, even in the completely wrong spot, works better than the telescoping needle?
Yes. It shows the effect is a hybrid. It's partly a genuine physiological mechanism. Breaking the skin triggers local immune responses and endorphins. But it's also partly placebo, driven by expectation, and partly the therapeutic relationship.
And that expectation part is huge. The BMC study notes that expectation leads to this huge pain reduction early on, but it diminishes significantly after about 18 sessions.
Yeah, the novelty wears off.
Exactly. The ritual itself creates the expectation, but once it becomes routine, the brain stops expecting a miracle.
Which is a perfect segue into how we actually define a placebo.
Yeah, because think about the sheer theater of an acupuncture clinic. The needles, the quiet room, the focused attention. It's a performance. And that brings us to Ted Kapchuk's 2002 paper in the Annals of Internal Medicine.
This paper completely flips our understanding of placebos.
It really does. Because we normally think of a placebo as a thing.
Yeah.
A dummy pill or a saline injection.
An inert object.
Right. But Kapchuk argues that the placebo isn't the pill at all. The placebo is the entire event. It's the compassionate care, the modulation of the patient's anxiety, the white coat, the practitioner taking time to listen.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, alternative and unconventional medicine practically masters this ritualistic drama.
Oh, absolutely.
The time spent with the patient, the physical touch, the act of listening. These are called non-specific psychosocial effects. And they are incredibly potent.
They really are. When an authority figure actually listens to you, your stress drops, your heart rate slows. It's biological.
It is. The paper asks a really tough, almost ethical question based on this. Can an alternative ritual, one with only non-specific effects and no active chemical ingredient, actually lead to better health outcomes than a proven conventional treatment given coldly and abruptly?
That is such a profound thought. Like, does a warm, empathetic Reiki session heal a subjective symptom better than a rushed 10-minute GP appointment where they just throw a pill at you and show you the door?
That's exactly the debate.
We've talked a lot about how powerful this ritual can be, but we need to pivot here. There is a fiercely critical side to this debate that says we are giving the placebo effect way, way too much credit.
Right. We have to look at the skeptics.
And this brings us to David Gorski's article from the Science-Based Medicine blog. They are taking absolutely no prisoners here.
They really aren't.
One of the terms they use that I found fascinating is biobabble.
Ah, yes, biobabble.
They describe it as the medical equivalent of Star Trek technobabble. It's used to dress up mystical beliefs with scientific-sounding words like quantum resonance or biofields to make it sound legitimate.
The core of the science-based medicine argument rests on the difference between subjective symptoms and objective disease.
Okay, break that down for us.
Well, placebos do not cure objective diseases. A placebo has never been shown in any rigorous trial to shrink a cancer tumor or repair a severed nerve or extend overall survival rates.
Right. They only show effects on subjective symptoms, things like pain, nausea, and self-reported anxiety. I like to think of it this way. It's like claiming a fresh coat of paint fixed the engine of your car.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Yes, you paint the car, it looks better, you feel better driving it. The subjective experience is vastly improved. But the mechanics under the hood haven't actually changed at all. The engine is still broken.
Exactly. The warning light is just hidden. And SBM explains how these perceived improvements, the idea that the engine is actually fixed, happen through basic statistics and trial artifacts.
Right, because people swear these therapies cured them. So how does SBM explain that?
First is regression to the mean, or spontaneous recovery. People usually seek out treatment when their symptoms are at their absolute worst.
Yeah, you don't go to a healer for a minor ache. You go when you can't walk.
Spot on. But the natural history of a condition is that it peaks and then naturally regresses back to the average state. So they falsely attribute this natural, spontaneous healing to whatever treatment they just received.
It's like taking a cough drop right when your immune system finally beats the cold and giving the lozenge all the credit.
Exactly. They also point to conditional switching. Patients drop out of studies or switch treatments when they feel worse, which artificially skews the remaining data to look overwhelmingly positive.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But I want to bring up this really fascinating concept from the reading, the open-label placebo.
Oh, this is a great point of contention.
These are placebos without deception. The doctor literally tells the patient, "I am giving you a dummy pill," and the patient still gets better. How does that work without tricking them?
Well, SBM has a very sharp critique of this. They argue their IS still deception happening. It's just stealthy.
How so?
If you look at the scripts used in these open label trials, the doctors explicitly tell the patients things like, placebos have powerful self-healing properties. They literally compare the patients to Pavlov's dogs, saying the body is conditioned to heal just by swallowing a pill.
Oh, I see. So they hype up the placebo effect itself.
Yes. The SBM argument is that this enthusiastic, authoritative script is just a new form of the exact same trick. It manipulates the brain's predictive coding. You expect relief because the doctor told you the placebo was powerful, so your brain lowers the pain signals.
Wow. Okay, so what does this all mean?
It's a lot to process.
It really is. We've looked at this through the lens of honest pluralism today. And the truth is, the placebo response in the energy healing space is undeniably large. People do feel better.
They absolutely do.
But whether you view that as a genuine physiological mechanism like the Reiki practitioners pointing to respiration rates or a product of the practitioner relationship and ritual, like Kapchuk suggests.
Or an illusion born of regression to the mean and trial artifacts, as SBM argues.
Right. Whichever camp you fall into, this phenomenon fundamentally shapes the outcome of the treatment.
It does. And I'd like to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over. We've clearly established that the theater of medicine, the attention, the empathy, the ritual, profoundly impacts how we experience pain and healing.
Without a doubt.
So if the actual performance of care is a biological intervention in itself, how should we redesign the standard 10-minute sterile doctor's appointment in our modern hospitals? Could we somehow harness the profound theatrical power of unconventional medicine without ever compromising the rigorous truth of science-based medicine?
That is a brilliant question. I reckon if we could crack that, it would change healthcare overnight. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the world around you, and we'll see you next time.